Wisconsin ranks 14th among all states when it comes to high school sports participation. That's according to the National Federation of State High School Associations. That was in 2019, I believe, that survey was taken. So what does the high school sport landscape look like after COVID lockdowns? Larry Mueller here, and our guest is going to help us answer that question. Stephanie Hauser is executive director of the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association, WIAA, and we'll cover the benefits of being a student athlete. We can talk about what high school sports fans across the state can expect this fall. And as we visit with Stephanie, I hope you'll join in. How important are high school sports to you? Do you have some kids playing high school sports? Did you play yourself? Did you attend your community's high school sports games? What sport did you play in high school? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Stephanie Hauser, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
You're welcome, and I appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to speak with you for a bit. How was your long weekend?
My long weekend was good. I played a little golf, and I had a chance to get out and do a walked 18 holes yesterday and had, it's a nice 6-mile walk. Not great results.
That was a great weekend then.
You know, I picked up a copy of the Wisconsin State Journal this morning. I don't know if you saw it. John Masson had an article, nice story, I thought, on high school sports. And he interviewed several local high school coaches. And I think was interested in, are we getting back to a sort of a sense of normalcy here, post-COVID? And he wanted to ask coaches and got a kind of a mixture, some issues with culture and leadership, but others not so much. But what was, in your view, what was the impact of the coronavirus on high school sports as a whole?
Well, Larry, in your lead-in, I heard that you used the data from 2019 to reference Wisconsin's participation numbers, and truly, I think the rest of the nation would tell you that that was the last year that we felt that our data was really reflective of what high school sports looks like, because you're right, it's been very, very abnormal since the spring of 2020. I did not see John's article, but I'm sure it's outstanding. John does such a good job writing about high school sports. And I would tell you that our observations have been much like what were provided to him today. And it's a mixed bag. We saw a lot of schools finally getting back to what felt like normal last year. But yet we are far from our 2019. Now we've got a virtual world. A lot of our events are being live streamed by high schools. They have cameras in their gyms and cameras on their fields now, which can actually open up the doors to, have grandmas and grandpas or relatives far away have the opportunity to watch a lot more games than they did before COVID happened. We've got a lot of kids coming back to sports. Last year we saw that to be down, especially in the bigger city areas. There were kids that had gotten away from being active in a high school sport for a year, and now this year they're seeing a stronger return of kids to their high school sports teams, and I'm sure coaches are thrilled to see that because we know how positive it is for kids to get connected to their high schools as being a part of their high school sports team. So I would agree, it's a mixed bag. A lot of encouragement, a lot of getting back to normal, but there are some things that probably are going to be changed not only for this year, but maybe for forever moving forward. Maybe we'll never go back to exactly how things were pre-spring of 2020.
Yeah, it's really hard to say. A couple of the coaches were just talking about the fact that there were some, for their teams, and this wasn't true for all teams, but their teams had a little bit of leadership culture and leadership issues. The kids had kind of, they One coach talked about, well, the seniors always help the, you know, the juniors and seniors always help the sophomores and the freshmen and so forth. And but they, a little of that got lost. The and sort of needs to be resurrected. Other schools didn't have that problem, but that was something that a few cited.
Well, what I hear in you describing that scenario is tradition. And many of our traditions were broken through COVID. Many traditions that had lasted forever. And, you know, you're right. Some of those may return and some may never come back. The good news is, again, we're getting kids back connected with those high schools. You know, for some kids, that's all they have is the opportunity to be on their high school team. And everybody that follows education-based athletics closely knows that the statistics support kids of having lower discipline issues, higher GPAs, higher attendance. You know, just that feeling of being connected and having positive role models in their lives. There are so many benefits of high school athletics. So whatever we can do at this level and at the local level to encourage those kids back and to help coaches and athletic directors get those kids connected, we sure want to do that to help them get back to feeling like they're back into their traditional way of doing things.
Let's take a call. Ann in Waldo, Wisconsin. Hi, Ann. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Get those kids connected. Yeah, I played basketball in 1972 or 73, right after Title IX set in. But the comment that was just made, if it wasn't for sports in college, I would have never gotten through it. Motivated me to want to do well in school, but because I wanted to play sports, because I couldn't growing up because of the inequalities.
Yeah. Comment on that, Stephanie.
That's a great point. I don't know if you are aware, but we've been celebrating the 50th anniversary of Title IX. We launched it in January of 2022 at the first ever WIAA Girls State Wrestling Tournament. And we've been celebrating it for this full calendar year of 2022. And we will culminate that celebration at our final tournament this fall at the state football tournament. It has been a milestone and it's been a life changer. Now, Ann, I'm just a little bit younger than you. I had the opportunity to play high school sports. But I also had the opportunity as an elementary and middle schooler to watch girls who were older than me that finally got the opportunity to play. And wow, what a difference maker it's been for them, not only in their high school years, but giving them that confidence to know that they can do anything.
Yeah, Ann, thanks. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. We own Title IX as the father of three daughters. Nobody happier about that than I am for sure. My own daughter, and you're right, Stephanie. My daughter learned really good studies habits because she had to, because sports took up, you know, that block of time every day, and she learned really good study habits. Now she's a sophomore in college, and she still gets to play. She's a soccer in the fall and high jumps in the spring for the track team. But those habits that she had to learn in high school really carried over in pretty much anything she does.
Larry, congratulations to her. You nailed it when you said lifelong lessons and just habits. There are a lot of studies out there that support the data that your top-level CEOs across the nation want to hire kids who've been involved in high school athletics because of their habits. They are hard workers. They're goal setters. They know how to operate and function in a team. What more important when you're trying to work on a big project for your place of work and you need to play a role in a team or be a leader? And so you're right, there are many, many benefits that I had the good fortune of being a part of that. My husband did as well. We also have three children that were involved in high school and now college athletics and beyond. And the things that they've learned have benefited them greatly.
Well, you know, there are some issues that they relate indirectly, maybe directly, I guess you could say, and that has to do with referees and officials. And there's a seems to be a nationwide referee shortage, and it's impacting sports across the board, including, I'm sure, for you and your folks.
It is indeed a national shortage. Wisconsin has been very fortunate in recent years that we seem to be not feeling quite as heavy of an impact of the shortage as some of our other states. But needless to say, we are indeed suffering the same consequences of not having enough licensed officials. And we are seeing implications this year where conferences are beginning to adjust their football games off of Friday nights and playing them on a Thursday or a Saturday because they don't feel that they have enough high-level varsity officials to officiate those games. So it definitely is impactful. There is not one single reason why it is happening. There is a multitude of reasons, sportsmanship being one of those, the way the officials are being treated by the people in the stand, by the coaches and the players themselves, you know, just the level of respect that they believe that they have been, you know, deserved to be treated by. There are other issues where the COVID threw a huge curveball at our officials, no pun intended, but a lot of our officials are getting up there in age, and they were fearful of being around young kids that they thought, you know, could make them sick. So we have seen a return of a lot of our officials. We have a goal each year of having 10,000 licensed officials, and last year we fell just short of that mark, but we're working really hard to get back to the goal of 10,000 licensed officials.
That's an amazing number. I hadn't thought about it. And those are 10,000 you need every year. Whoa.
And that doesn't count the officials that license in more than one sport. I believe that number is right around 17,000. So, Larry, if you were in that number of 10,000, we're just counting you one time. But if you also do football and you do girls and boys basketball, you know, we would license you two different licenses. So then it's a total of 10,000 people with 17,000 licenses. Those are our goals for the year, and we always strive to meet that mark. It's been more challenging after COVID, though, certainly.
Wow, that's amazing figures, 10,000 and 17,000 officials involved in high school athletics here in Wisconsin, probably similarly across our neighboring states are probably about the same as we are. It's an amazing number. Stephanie Hauser, our guest, she's the executive director of the WIAA, Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association. She's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments as we move along. Did you participate? Do you have kids that are participating? Questions about the whole process? Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at high school sports on the program today, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. Stephanie Hauser is our guest, the executive director of the WIAA. Where do you think high school sports are headed these days? You have kids involved in high school sports. Did you play in high school sports? I hope you'll join in with your own experiences or questions. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Stephanie, let's go back to the officials for a minute. Someone was wondering about training. Does the WIAA sponsor training for officials, and you know, what could a, say, somebody who's interested in becoming an official expect in the way of training? And then is what, and there's compensation, I'm sure, as well.
Those are great questions. One of the things that people usually don't know about officials is they are, by definition of Wisconsin law, they are independent contractors. So although the WIAA does issue a license for them, the training does not come from this office. The training happens really among other officials. Many of the officials in our state belong to professional organizations, officials associations, and they provide their own resources. They're on court or on field training. Some meet as often as once a month. Some of them have online question and answer forums that they can submit to help each other out. Some go as far as attending national level officials conferences and training. So that is the primary source of where officials get their training. We are always brainstorming things in this office and with our member schools that we can do to help officials to make their life a little easier. Things as, you know, making their registration easier, helping them navigate to sites to, you know, where do they buy their equipment that they wear? You know, the officials behind the plate, you know, they have to have a face mask and a chest protector. Where do they get those? So we try to help them find those. We also give them tips and ideas of how to get games, how to reach out to athletic directors and get contracted to do games. And, of course, yes, there is compensation that they receive in turn for those games. This office does contract officials for the purposes of WIAA events. So the regional, sectional, state tournaments, we do issue contracts for officials, and we provide the compensation for them for those events. But by and large, it's our 518 member schools and those athletic directors that are contracting the services of WIAA officials throughout the regular season.
Pat emailed us, and onto a kind of a different topic here. How is the practice of schools, parents, or teams filing for injunctions and protests affecting the overall operation of tournament outcomes? There's been a little of that.
You're right. There is, unfortunately, there's always a little of that. And those are challenging times when faced with those because it affects so many others. I think that's the most challenging piece of it. The most common type of, like you mentioned, the most common type of intervention is those seeking a temporary restraining order. And so, you know, that usually happens fairly quickly. It's usually contingent upon a game that was just played. And very often it is during the tournament series. And so it would potentially impact the very next event, whether it's a regional track meet and a relay team gets disqualified and now they're not going to qualify for the sectionals on Thursday. Those are very fast, very highly emotional topics, and certainly they are not pleasant for anyone who's involved in that. The school themselves, the kids and the families, our office staff, those are really unfortunate situations when they happen. This office has a duty to uphold the rules that our membership has set forth. And so, you know, that is our responsibility, and remember that every one of those schools is a part of this membership on a volunteer basis. The WIAA is a not-for-profit, small business, and it's a voluntary association. And so that oftentimes we have conversations like that with the school and the leadership, and they do a really good job of navigating their parents and their community, explaining to them that, you know, these are rules that are in place for all schools, and sometimes it is difficult to embrace those rules because, again, the emotions are so high and there's so much at stake for those kids. So, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily happening more frequently. Doesn't impact the work that we do on a great basis, but certainly in those moments, it feels big in those moments for everybody involved.
When it has to happen that quickly, just one more little follow-up to it. You have, what is there, committee of three people or something that look at this and say, well, this situation, the correct procedure was followed or what have you?
There are several steps in the membership constitution that outline due process, whether it be an individual or a member school itself. And once the entire due process is exhausted on this end, then there's nothing more that they can do to seek relief within the WIAA. At that point in time, they would have to determine if they want to continue on to go down a path of a legal option or something like that. But certainly, you know, due process is afforded and spelled out for schools, and that is their choice as to how far they want to take it or not.
And a different topic in a way, but last year I know there were some state lawmakers who were advocating for the WIAA to change its transfer eligibility rules to create exceptions for COVID-related transfers. you know, these transfer rules are in place for reasons. And basically, maybe you can explain why we have to have transfer rules.
It's a really great question and a great topic to bring up, Larry, because there are just so many sides to those questions when they come up. So often when someone reaches out to, you know, for example, a legislator with their concerns, so often it is a single situation where a family was not happy about the way the rule was applied or how it impacted their own family. And there are a lot of really unfortunate and compelling stories out there. You know, that COVID's been really, really hard for all of us. But you're right. There is a large global reason why transfer rules exist. And the member schools themselves have established those rules for those very reasons. They want the integrity of the rule to be upheld. And so we do exhaust every possible way we can within the rules to allow a student to have eligibility. But sometimes the rules that exist don't allow for full eligibility or any eligibility at all. And you're right. Nationally, we try to stay ahead of the game by checking in on the national landscape to see what other high school associations are doing to make sure that what Wisconsin is doing is in line and consistent with what other state associations are doing. And it's a world that's changing around us, and so that is a challenge to try to stay one step ahead. One of the things that we've tried to establish, this, especially in this past year with our new leadership, is to reconnect with our legislators. We have opened up the doors, gone down to the Capitol to have several meet and greets. We've invited them to come up to the annual meeting, to the area meetings, come up to the WIA office to take a visit, really just to help answer their questions. A lot of them have questions about really how are WIAA rules made? What would be the process if the membership wanted to change a rule? What would that look like? So we walk through the steps of what that looks like with them and are always here to answer their questions. You know, we are voters too, and so it's important for us to feel like our legislators are informed.
And when it comes to rules, usually I imagine the rules, if a school could request or a group of schools could request a rules change. I suppose that's how the process works. It may come from the schools themselves.
Yes, there are several avenues in which a rule can be changed. And that is one of the avenues, is the schools can put together a petition and have I think it is, without looking at my notes, Larry, I think it's 10% of the membership to sign the petition, which would bring it forth to an annual meeting. Every April, the membership votes at an annual meeting. So, yes, there is that avenue. Requests for constitutional change can also come directly from the Board of Control themselves, which they are elected by the membership. Their principals, superintendents, athletic directors can also come through the Advisory Council. Oftentimes, member rules come up just at our area meetings in discussion. And so what our staff does is we vet those to see if there is a growing interest in it. So sometimes our staff will even put out a suggested rule change to the membership to say, hey, here's what we're hearing. Let's do a grassroots show of hands. How many of you are interested in continuing this conversation? So really all of those big rule changes can come a number of ways, but ultimately it would go to the membership for a vote in April at the annual meeting.
Michael in Wauwatosa sent us an email. He says Wisconsin has a strong rugby culture with boys and girls playing in high school, and rugby is now an Olympic sport, and the U.S. will soon host the men's and women's World Cups. Any thought of the WIAA adopting rugby?
It's a great sport. The school that I was at Spash, has a rugby club, and so I've had an opportunity to watch them play. It's a fun sport. Because we are an association made up of member schools, requests to add a new sport come directly from the members themselves. When 5% of the membership has shown an interest in the addition of a new sport, that's when it comes to our board for initial consideration. When 10% of our member schools wish to sanction that sport, we would talk about adding a tournament series as well. So far, there has been no request to add the sport of rugby.
No.
However, we are currently under an investigation of adding a new sport of lacrosse.
Oh.
We have had many conversations with our member schools. That process is happening. We do have enough schools interested that the Board of Control has given us a directive to really put some details together and bring that forth for consideration of that sport. So right now, that is the only current sport that's being looked at, and that should be a decision that comes within the next several months.
How many high school sports do we have here in Wisconsin?
Let's see here. I think we're at 24 right now. We'd have to look and see with the addition of lacrosse, that would change that. But I think the magic number right now is 24.
24, and is it 24 boys and 24 girls sports, or how does it shake out?
Well, let's see here. On the girls' side, I'm just looking at our website to add them up. I think that they are exactly equal. We added girls wrestling last year, but, you know, you're putting me on the spot, and I'd have to count them up here while I'm looking at my screen.
But it's pretty close.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
All right. All right. That's fine. That's interesting. 24 sports and one more coming. Maybe it's going to be 25. Well, what sports are you looking forward to watching this fall? You have some kids there. Are they playing?
My kids have all graduated high school and college. Well, actually, I've got one still in college, still playing basketball in college. But my daughter is on the University of Virginia volleyball coaching staff. She's the director of operations there. So volleyball is, of course, near and dear to my heart. She played volleyball. But all three of my kids are multi-sport athletes, so I have lots of favorites. My daughter played volleyball, basketball, and softball. And I did 1 year of track on top of those three. So, I have one claim to fame in the track world, and that's that I held the triple jump record for my school for 1 year. But the rest of the story, that's how it goes, right? And now for the rest of the story, it was the very first year that the WIAA added triple jump as an actual official event. I only held it for that one season and got broken by a lot the very next year. And then my boys were football, basketball, and then one son was a golfer and the other son was a track and field athlete. They also both played baseball up through their early years in high school.
Oh, man.
So those are the ones I probably are the most... I would feel the most informed about, but I'll tell you, there's not a WIAA state tournament that I don't love going to. Last year in my first year, I was able to get to all of our state tournaments, at least in part, and each one is so unique and so exciting in different ways that they are just outstanding events. I'm just so proud to be a part of those.
Really enjoy watching the so many of them on TV. It's so much fun to watch the boys or girls basketball, for example. Those are great tournaments. They're well run, and they're always exciting, and they're always a lot of fun to watch for sure. Another question I had in the back of my head, and has finally come to the front of my head, and that has to do with diversity, or in terms of diverse backgrounds. What's done to encourage students from diverse backgrounds to try out for sports and that sort of thing?
Well, certainly it's something that we promote, and we know that what we do as leaders in this organization matter. But I think really the impactful piece is at that local level. When kids see coaches and they see leadership, athletic leaders who look like them and who come from backgrounds similar to them, I think that is an instant attraction to want to be a part of something when they see someone who looks like them. But it also has to be intentional action. You have to really seek out kids that maybe normally weren't involved. Again, going back to those benefits, Larry, there are just so many benefits of having your students involved in your school programs. And so we need to all be intentionally involved in taking action to get them connected and get them to be a part of it. We are working hard at this level. We just opened up a satellite office down in southeast Wisconsin. One of our staff members, LeVar Ridgway, and his assistant, Molly O'Brien, are in that Milwaukee office now 4 out of the 5 days a week, and we think that is a great avenue for our very, very densely populated membership schools in southeast Wisconsin to have an office real close by if they want to stop in and talk with a WIA executive staff member. And so that is an outreach that we're doing to help our doors feel more open to parts of the state that felt like Stevens Point was a far drive to go have an in-person conversation. We also, as a staff, are going to be doing some training here. We'll be starting this Friday with a launch, doing some diversity, equity, and inclusion training with our own staff of 20 here in Stevens Point.
So I was wondering about the staff size, and of course you're located primarily in Stevens Point, but so 20, roughly 20 people in Stevens Point, and then and some people then in Milwaukee.
We have 20 staff total. 18 are here in Stevens Point 100% of the time, and then 2 of our staff members are in Milwaukee most of the time, with here in Stevens Point on occasion, depending on the type of meeting that we've got.
We had a question from someone in, here's Tim in Rice Lake with that question. Tim, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
My question is, it appears as if the parochial schools are dominating the divisions. What is the WIA going to do to level the playing field so that there isn't that domination by one entity?
Thanks, Tim. It's a question that has been happening for quite some time. And I don't know how closely you've followed the history on this, but since the inception of the private schools into the WIA, so WISA dissolved and all schools became one membership in 2000, that has been a question that has been gone around now on a couple different cycles. Most recently in 2014, the membership did put a committee together, studied the topic for about 9 months, and brought a proposal forward to the membership to vote on. It was called the Success Factor. And there were numerous other plans were looked upon before that one was brought to the membership. Ultimately, the membership said no to all of the different proposals that had come forward. So since 2014, the conversation, I guess, minimized a bit, because the membership did vote no, and recently really has come forward again with requests to look at really the competitive balance. You know, Tim, a lot of things have changed since 2000, and one of that is open enrollment. Even with public schools, kids are free to move between schools. You know, that used to be a little bit unique to private schools with the boundaries, and that's changed a lot. And so it's not really necessarily just a private public discussion anymore. It's really more about haves and have-nots, kids that have access to resources, club teams, travel teams. There's just so many factors that come into play that the conversation has become much more broad than it used to be. So we have established a committee once again. They have been meeting twice monthly since December. It is called the Ad Hoc Competitive Balance Committee. They have put together a first draft of a plan that includes a little blend of a success factor, a little blend of a model from the Colorado Association, which looks at other factors such as the demographics of your school, socioeconomic factors, location of your school. Also, they've looked at some flavors of the Ohio State Association, which involves kids moving in and out for different reasons, which could be somewhat, you know, like what you're talking about, Tim, private versus public. But again, that is in its first draft. All of our members are going to hear that for the first time beginning next Monday. They're going to give their feedback. And then ultimately, we anticipate that the membership may be voting again on a change in April of 2023.
And on that note, we are out of time, Stephanie. I want to thank you so much. And maybe we can have you back and we can talk some more about that when that decision is made. Thank you so much, Stephanie Hauser, Executive Director of the WIAA. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.